David Hawkins is senior editor of CQ and Roll Call and author of the Hawkins Here blog and column. He's covered Congress in various positions at CQ since 1995. I don't know, David, that seems like yesterday, 1995. It isn't?
It's what, nine speakers of the House ago. I think that's how you measure it in dog years or in speaker of the House years. It's a long, a lot of political water under the bridge in the last 23 years.
You know, David, I have great respect for you. And of course, CQ, as far as I'm concerned, is the Bible of Congress. And back in the day, Hunter College, we all had to order it. Everybody in the class had to have a subscription to in the legislative process class. Pretty good stuff, huh?
Well, that's nice to hear. I wish we could revive that. You know, my corporate chieftains, they're only making like 25% profit. So we need to gin it up a little bit more.
That's not enough. That's not enough. Okay. So you've written a recent article I saw on political dynasties, or as they say in Great Britain, dynasties in Congress. What was that all about?
You know, I was looking for, like everybody, I was looking for a way to jump off the royal wedding and royal mania in the U.S. and sort of make the point that American voters like their political royal families too. That historically, Congress, the federal government, has almost always had one or more sort of political royal families. You know, from the Adamses through the famous Frelinghuysens of New Jersey. Not too famous, but they produced something like seven members of Congress from New Jersey. You know, the Tafts, the Roosevelts, the Rockefellers, the Bushes, of course, the Clintons, and the Kennedys. But what I observed when I went back and looked at biographical rosters of members of Congress in recent years is that we don't have the kind of multi-generational dynasties that we used to have. You know, the Kennedy one goes back five generations. Joe Kennedy, who now represents the area south of Boston in the House, is the his great great grandfather was a Boston's congressman at the turn of the century. But we don't really have those kind of people anymore. We have one or two generations. But when they run, they usually win, and that's going to happen again this year. You have Greg Pence, the doppelganger lookalike brother of his. Of the vice president, who ran the sort of stealth campaign, refused to talk to the press, refused to participate in debates, just basically traded on his name and won the primary in a safe, very, very safe, safely Republican district in Indiana. There's a woman who's in West Virginia, whose dad was a member of the House leadership, you know, back in the 80s, who's cruising in. So there are going to be several more members of Congress. There's usually about two dozen members of Congress who have a parent or a grandparent or a sibling in Congress.
When I interned back in the 1960s, David Hawkins, for Congressman Frank Thompson, he had a nickname for everybody, and his nickname for the Frelinghuysens, who certainly were around, were Frozenhosen. So,
Sorry. Here's your nerdy trivia for the Frelinghuysen started as, I think, Presbyterian or Dutch Reform ministers. Now, where I come from, my religious faith, the Episcopalians, are called the Frozen Chosen.
But, I get it. Yeah, yeah. Well,
you ever heard that before?
No, but I heard that about the Jewish people. You know, the Chosen.
Okay.
Okay, so in other words, my group. Here we are, and I wanted to ask you about the Farm Bill. Everybody wanted the Farm Bill. Everybody we talked to on the Congressional Corner says, Farm Bill, Farm Bill, Farm Bill. Farm Bill goes down.
Right, at least until June. Why does the Farm Bill go down? Because it got held hostage to immigration, of all things. And at the same time, the Farm Bill itself was a legislatively weak vehicle. Usually the Farm Bill, going back, you know, to the New Deal practically, the reason the Farm Bill has been passed routinely is that there's a coalition of, or not since the New Deal, since the Great Society anyway, coalition of Democrats who want food stamps, social safety net food stamps, and Republicans who want, rural Republicans, who want generous commodity price supports. That's been the magic formula. It has historically been one of the most routinely bipartisan bills. not this year. As with virtually everything else, it was a party line vote with all the Democrats opposed because they thought that the Republicans wanted to impose draconian work requirements on people who were getting food stamps. And so every Democrat voted no, and then the Republicans peeled off into three different camps. The hard right Freedom Caucus conservatives, who wanted to hold the bill hostage to a conservative, Trumpian, pro-wall immigration bill. And then what I guess you'd call them the blue state or Latino district or Hillary district Republicans, who want to get this immigration thing fixed more in line of the way the Democrats want. They want to fix DACA, the program that allows, that shields from deportation kids who were brought into the country illegally. They would like to, some would even like a pathway to citizenship. At a minimum, they want to do something in an election year that makes, convinces their Latino voters and their Democratic voters that they have finally fixed this problem that Congress has been debating now for almost 20 years.
Well, of course, David Hawkins, there are an awful lot of farms in our area, and these people are really depending on the farm bill. So what is your assessment of whether it gets fixed or not in time for a June passage, or whether these coalitions you've been talking about hold up and goodbye farm bill?
Well, as we're speaking, the Republican leadership announced that they have a plan to put the farm bill back in after Congress comes back from its Memorial Day break to redo the farm bill. They're talking about votes on immigration that will make these people happy. There are these blue state Republicans that I mentioned a minute ago are basically preparing to work with the Democrats to essentially all line up. And there's a parliamentary procedure, which I know you know about, called a discharge petition that allows an absolute majority of the House to do something that the leadership doesn't want to do. It's how the campaign finance bill got through 15 years ago. It's how the restoration of the Export-Import Bank got done a few years ago. Generally, it's things that the leadership doesn't want to do. If 218 House members say, we insist that you put this bill on the floor, then they will. So that looks like what's going to happen. Now, as I understand the farm bill, unlike other bills that when they lapse, there are shutdowns or suspensions in service, that at a minimum, many, many programs continue sort of running in place, even if there is no revived authorization. And presumably those programs that need a revived authorization, they will do some sort of short-term patch. You know, it essentially says current farm programs can continue going while we deliberate the rest of the farm bill. You know, we're just talking about the House here. Senate's got a different idea of what they want out of the farm bill. The farm bill may be one of the few things that get done this year.
And will the incumbents get blamed for this if it doesn't pass? Is that what happens?
You know, I don't think so. I actually, I was looking back at my history the other day, and I was kind of astonished to see that legislative productivity seems to have no correlation to the results of a midterm election. There have been do-nothing midterm election years, and there have been do a whole lot of midterm election years in the last 20 years. And in every midterm election in this century, in other words, since 2002, one or both chambers of Congress have flipped partisan sides. So even in productive, legislatively productive years, the voters don't seem to want to reward the status quo. They seem to want to change it up anyway.
And if you were a farmer, what would you be thinking right now?
If I was a farmer, I guess I'd be thinking that the rural Republicans or the rural members who represent rural areas who are overwhelmingly Republican are not going to they're not going to screw this up. I think it sounds counterintuitive because Congress has had the ability to drop the ball so many times in recent years, but I think they're not going to leave the farmers in the lurch.
We've been talking to David Hawkins, the senior editor of CQ and Roll Call and author of Hawkins Here blog and column. Terrific. Been covering Congress since 1995. Thank you, David.